There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass.
Or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome again to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, inviting you once more into our humble house of horror. Come in, come in. Don't be afraid. There'll be plenty of time for that later, huh? Yes. Yes, in fact, sooner than later. For tonight, for your fright delight, we will feature a teacher of creatures. That is to say, a man who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of other men. One who even I can learn a thing or two from, huh? Who knows who I'm speaking of? The Shadow knows. And after that, we'll go for a stroll in and where I always go. Sunset Boulevard, of course. But first, the Shadow!
Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret. The hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs.
Today's drama, the nursery rhyme murder. Brookside Home is a private sanitarium located in a densely wooded area in the suburbs. It's about 8 o'clock in the evening as Superintendent Alfred Foster walks down the corridor on his way to visit one of his patients.
Good evening, Bert. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Dr. Foster. I've been waiting for you.
You should be asleep by now, Bert.
Oh, I've been waiting for you to come and read to me.
But we can't read to you every night.
But you promised. You said if I ate all my supper, you'd read a story to me. And I eat it all, Dr. Foster. Every bit of it. The cereal and everything. Read to me now, please.
We told you, Bert, that after you'd been here a while, we'd have to stop reading to you at night.
You're not going to read to me?
You're tired tonight. A little feverish, too, I think. Now just go to sleep, and in the morning...
I won't. You promised to read me a bedtime story.
No, you broke your promise. Bert, you mustn't get excited
You
like that.
Broke your promise.
Bert, stay where you are. Don't come any nearer.
You're bad, and I'm going to hurt
Bert,
you.
Bert, no. Take your hands off my throat. Orderly.
I'll make you read me one.
Orderly,
you...
hurry.
What is it, Dr. Foster? What?
Bert, get him off me quick, Andrews, before he...
Let him go.
Now stay over there, Bert.
Thank you, Andrews. That was close.
He promised to read to me, and he broke his promise.
You want me to get one of the other orderlies, Dr. Foster?
No, that's all right, Andrews. Bert just got a little excited. I can handle him, all right?
I don't know. I think we ought to send him over to the violent ward.
You better not send me away. You better not.
Oh, now, Bert.
You better not try and send me away. If you do, I'll hurt you all. I'll hurt you all bad. Orderly. Orderly.
Be quiet, Bert, and go to sleep. 3 o'clock.
I want a drink of water, Andrews. I want a drink of water.
Go to sleep, Bert.
Please, Andrews. Please.
All right, Bert, just a second. Okay, here's your water.
I was awful thirsty.
Here you are.
Thanks, Andrews. Now, give me those keys.
No, you don't.
Give them to me. Now, I got the keys. I'm going to get out. I'm going to get out.
At home.
Hello, this is Polly Andrews. I'm Harvey Andrews' wife.
Oh, yes. Hello, Mrs. Andrews.
Is my husband there?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Andrews, but he isn't in. All the orderlies are out in the grounds hunting for Bert Eustace. He escaped last night, you know.
Well, that's just it, operator. Our cottage is at the north end of the grounds. I understand Eustace is violent. I'm here all alone, and, well, I'm frightened.
I don't know what we can do. I'll tell Mr. Andrews to phone you when he gets back here.
Well, all right, thanks.
Not at all. Goodbye, Mrs. Andrews.
Goodbye. Who's that? Who's there?
Hello, Polly.
You! No! No! Don't!
Hello, Polly Flinders. Sat among the cinders, warming her pretty little toes. Her mother came and caught her and whipped her little daughter for spoiling her nice new clothes.
Lamont, I know it's presuming on our acquaintance, but I want to thank you and Miss Lane for coming to my office this morning when I phoned.
Not at all, Fred. Glad to be of service.
The fact is, I need your help desperately. You see, Lamont, I'm a psychiatrist, not a criminologist. I don't think it's a case for the police, but I do need help in trying to find this escaped patient.
And the searching party found no trace of Bert Eustace last night, Dr. Foster?
No, Miss Lane. He's still at large. I feel pretty badly about it, too. Bert was showing signs of violence. In fact, he attacked me yesterday. But instead of sending him to the violent ward, I kept him here for observation.
Then you think he's capable of being a killer?
I'm afraid so, Miss Lane.
What kind of a case was this patient, Fred?
Well, not fundamentally a criminal type, but extremely unbalanced emotionally. During his periods of irrationality, he reverted to his childhood and lived in a complete juvenile world.
What do you mean by that?
But he went to bed when it got dark. He ate his cereal faithfully, insisted that I read bedtime stories and nursery rhymes to him.
Bedtime stories, yes. And nursery rhymes?
How have you been handling the case?
Trying to find out as much as I can about his background, especially his childhood.
Any luck?
Well, I haven't been able to get much out of Bert himself, but his father has given a pretty good lead.
His father?
Yes. He's a well-to-do but eccentric old man. He used to come to visit his son devotedly every week. Recently, he's been coming less and less.
You think Bert has some sort of a father complex? Perhaps his father's been neglecting him lately?
And... yes, he's become more and more unbalanced until he reached the breaking point and decided to escape. Yes, something like that, Lamont. Bert is...
Dr. Foster.
Yes, what is it? What's the matter?
Mrs. Andrews. Harvey Andrews' wife was murdered in our cottage last night.
What?
They just found her strangled to death. But the rest of it, doesn't make sense.
What doesn't make sense?
The killer carried a body upstairs and left it in the fireplace.
Horrible. Poor woman's body curled up in the fireplace like this.
Very strange resting place.
Yes. Notice one other thing, Fred.
Yes?
Killer took the shoes off the corpse.
But why? Why did he take her shoes off?
Why did he carry her body upstairs and put it in the fireplace? It doesn't make sense.
Contrary, Margot, it does make sense.
What do you mean?
The tortured depths of Bert's mind, he acted with a terrible logic.
I don't think I follow you, Lamont.
Neither do I.
You said this man Bert loved bedtime stories and nursery rhymes.
Yes, right? That's right.
Well, in my opinion, he killed this woman right out of a Mother Goose rhyme.
what?
Listen to this, Margot. Little Polly Flinders sat among the cinders, warming her pretty little toes.
Not the dead woman's first name was Polly.
Yes, and she sat among the cinders. That would mean the fireplace, Margot.
Yes, and warming her pretty little toes. No wonder the killer took her shoes off.
Precisely. The clues are all in the rhyme. I wonder if it's only the beginning.
What do you mean, Lamont?
I wonder if the killer's going to stop with his first murder, Margot. Because with all the Mother Goose stories there are, death can rhyme many times.
Oh, Lamont, and Miss Lane, I'm glad you're here.
Came right out after we got your phone call, Fred. What's wrong?
We haven't been able to locate Harvey Andrews, the husband of the dead woman.
But it's midnight now. You mean you've been looking for him all day?
Yes, Miss Lane, ever since his wife's death. Andrews was out trying to find Bert with the rest of the searching party, and now he's vanished.
Hmm. The woman is killed and her husband disappears.
Oh, pardon me, Lone. Hello?
This is Parks, Dr. Foster. Could you come out to the reception room for a minute?
Yes. Yes, of course, Parks. Lamont, Miss Lane, if you'll excuse me for a moment, I'm going out to the reception room. Maybe the searching party has come in.
Yes, of course.
Mark, do you suppose Bert has killed the orderly as well as his wife?
I don't know, Margot. Strange, I haven't been able to locate him yet.
Oh, it's Dr. Foster's phone, Lamont.
Yeah. I suppose I better answer. Hello?
Listen, Doctor. Little boy blue, come blow your horn. The sheep's in the meadow. The cow's in the corn. Where's the little boy who looks after the sheep? He's under the haystack, fast asleep.
Who is this? Hello? Hello?
What's the matter, Lamont? Who was that?
Bert Eustace, Margot. Come on, I think we better get outside fast.
Where are we going?
To the farm and back to the sanitarium.
What do you expect to find out there?
I wouldn't be surprised, Margot, if we found little boy Blue.
I think we should be wandering around the grounds in the middle of the night without Dr. Foster.
And Dr. Foster will be very glad we left without him, Margot. Hold the flashlight up.
Right.
Isn't that a haystack next to the barn?
Yes, Lamont.
Come on, Margot, but careful. We may be walking into a trap. Here we are. Here's a pitchfork. I'm going to start digging.
Lamont, what do you expect to find?
The killer's given us a clue, Margot. If I'm not wrong... Good Lord.
There's a body under this haystack. It's Andrews. And he's wearing a blue orderly's jacket.
Yes, Margot. Little boy Blue.
Only this little boy Blue isn't just fast asleep. He's dead. Come on, listen.
Killer's laugh after you found the body, Lamont?
Yes, we ran after him, but lost him in the darkness, Fred.
First it was little Polly Flinders, then it was little boy Blue. I wonder who Bert will pick next.
I can guess his next victim, Miss Lane.
Who?
Myself.
You?
I'm afraid of the same thing, Fred.
Bert hated me as much as he hated Andrews. As I see it, he went to Andrews' house to kill him and found Andrews wasn't there and killed his wife instead.
And he caught Andrews in the grounds later and killed him and buried him under the haystack.
Yes, and logically... Well... I come next.
You could be right, Fred.
I'm afraid I am. Oh, we've got to find this man. We've got to.
The police have a statewide dragnet out for him now.
Yes. They're so busy covering the highways and terminals. I wonder if they haven't given the most logical place a very fast examination.
The most logical place?
Yes. Bert's home. I think we'd better have a talk with Bert's father, Lamont. I wouldn't be surprised if he knew a great deal more about where his son was hiding.
It's a good idea. Come on, Margot.
I'll get my things.
Well, that won't be necessary.
What do you mean?
You're not going with us, Fred. It's not safe.
Oh, but
you admitted yourself you're probably next on Bert's list.
Yes,
you're the psychiatrist. I'm the criminologist, remember?
We'll phone you here at the office as soon as we've seen old man Eustace.
Well, all right. Thanks, Lamont.
Forget it. Come on, Mark.
And so, Mr. Eustace, at Dr. Foster's suggestion, we decided to come here to see you.
I see.
I know you're as anxious to find Bert as we are, Mr. Eustace.
Yes, I am, ma'am.
Then, if we could just step inside for a moment, Mr. Eustace, and talk to you?
All right. All right, step inside.
Thank you.
Follow me into the parlor. This way.
Monty really is an eccentric.
Yeah. Did you ever see anything like this old mausoleum?
No, and I don't think anybody else has for the last 50 years.
Here we are. It's a little dusty. We haven't used the parlor for some time. Sit down.
Thank you. You live here all alone, Mr. Eustace?
Yes. Yes, I do. Lived here all alone ever since Bertram went away. I miss him very much.
And before that, Mr. Eustace?
Before that, it was just Bertram and I. Bertram's mother has been dead almost 40 years.
I see. You know, of course, that Bert left the hospital.
Yes. Yes, I know.
You read it in the papers, I suppose?
No, I didn't read it in the papers. But I know it, though. I know it.
You couldn't by any chance tell us where Bert is now, could you, Mr. Eustace?
I don't know, Mr. Cranston. I don't know. What's that?
What was that noise?
Must have been the cat. She must have knocked something over upstairs.
Those are hardly the footsteps of a cat, Mr. Eustace.
Well, they aren't, are they? Must be someone else in the house.
I think there is.
Then I better find out who.
Come back here, Mr. Eustace! Mr. Eustace!
Quick, Lamont! He's locking the door!
Mr. Eustace!
Oh, he's bolted it.
Certainly has, Margot. We're locked in.
It looks as though we were too slow.
Yes, well, we're breaking out of the parlor down there. Both Mr. Eustace and Bert have disappeared. Come on, Margot. We've got to make sure. We'll go down this corridor. Stay close to me.
Don't worry, Lamont. Oh!
What's the matter, darling?
I just ran into another of those darn spider webs.
Spider web won't hurt you.
Maybe not, but there was a spider in the middle of this one. No wonder Bert was unbalanced living in this old mansion.
Yes, with a queer old duck like Eustace for a father. Mm-hmm. He's certainly... Margot, listen.
It's Bert. He's upstairs in the floor above us. Lamont!
Come on, Margot. Down the end of this corridor here. Must be a flight of stairs there.
Here are the stairs. Come on. He's up there. Top of the stairs.
Goosey, gander.
Listen.
Where shall I wander? Upstairs and downstairs. And in my lady's chamber. There I met a man who would not say his prayers. I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Lamont, it must be Mr. Eustace, the poor old man.
Wait a second till I have a look.
Here's the flash.
Maybe the old boy is...
What's the matter?
Margot, this isn't Mr. Eustace.
It isn't?
No. It's Bert.
But Lamont, old Mr. Eustace couldn't have just vanished into thin air.
Looks as if he did, Margot. We certainly went over every inch of the house.
You really think we can pick up his trail at Dr. Foster's house?
That's the most logical place to look for him now. Well, that's Fred's place up ahead. Mm. Here we are. After you, darling.
Thanks.
Now, if we can just...
What's the matter?
Well, I saw something in the car headlights.
What?
Figure of a man back there behind the garage. Looked like old man Eustace.
Oh, Margot.
Margot, I'm going around back. You go into Fred's house. Tell him I was delayed.
Careful, darling, please. That old man is a crazy killer.
Shadow's going to set a trap, Margot. This time, I think the crazy killer has spoken his last nursery rhyme.
I'm so glad you caught me, Blaine. The killer has been here.
You've seen him?
Yes. I saw the same figure Lamont saw when I stopped to pick up the mail.
Old Mr. Eustace.
Yes, and he left this in the mailbox.
What is it?
A note. Listen. Dr. Foster went to Gloucester. in a shower of rain. He stepped in a puddle up to his middle and never went there again.
Then old Mr. Eustace is here. Lamont did see him.
He must have. It must mean that crazy killer is going to creep into this house and murder me in the night. He's out of his mind. None of us is safe anymore. We're all... Why, this is strange.
What is it?
The killer really is close. Here's another note. Here on my desk. Eustace must have slipped in through the window and left it.
Another note?
Yes. And the odd part about it is, it's addressed to you.
To me?
Yes. Read it.
See, saw, Marjorie Daw. Jackie shall have a new master. He shall have but a penny a day, because he can't work any faster. I don't understand.
Marjorie Daw. It's almost like Margot.
You mean the killer?
I'm afraid he means you, Miss Lane. Margot. Marjorie. Very close, aren't they? Close enough for all practical purposes.
Dr. Foster, why are you looking at me like that?
It's a nice rhyme, isn't it? It has a swing to it.
I...
Seesaw, Marjorie Daw. Jackie shall have a new master. He shall have but a penny a day because he can't work any faster.
You're the nursery rhyme killer.
Yes, Miss Lane, I am. I love nursery rhymes. Old Mother Hubbard went to a cupboard to get a poor dog a bone.
Stay away from me.
Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating his Christmas pie.
Stay away.
Jack and Jill went up the hill.
Lane.
Peter, pumpkin eater.
No!
These four, Marjorie.
What's that?
Who's in this room? I don't see anyone. Someone I can't see. Who are you?
You like to hear a little nursery rhyme, Dr. Foster?
Who are you?
I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me. What can be the use of him is more than I can see.
Stop!
Very, very like me from the heels up to the head. And I see him jump before me when I jump into my bed.
Stop it! I'm going mad!
You're mad already, Foster. Your mind has been clouded by the dark shadows you profess to study.
Who are you?
The shadow, Foster. The shadow here to see justice done.
Shadow?
You thought you could blame these murders on Bert and then on his father. You became so obsessed with his case that your own mind broke under the strain.
Let me out of here. I've got to get out of here.
No, Foster. The state has a place for you. A place where never again will you be allowed loose among society. A place where you can safely recite nursery rhymes to your heart's content.
Well, that's the whole story, Margot. Foster wasn't a doctor at all. He was just a clever quack who outsmarted himself.
He became so obsessed with abnormal cases such as Bert Eustace that he became unbalanced himself. Is that it?
That's right, Margot. Bert's escape must have been the snapping point for Foster's mind. He went on a rampage, blaming everything on Bert. And when we went to see old man Eustace, Foster was afraid we'd find Bert, get the truth out of him. So he had to get rid of Bert and then shift the blame to the father.
Then Foster was the one Paulie Andrews saw, and it's his voice we heard on the phone. Both Bert and his father were completely innocent.
That's right, Margaret.
I still don't see why he called you in on the case when he was guilty, Lamont.
And that's how he outsmarted himself. He didn't want to risk calling in the authorities, but he did need an outsider to verify his alibis and collaborate his statements. I'm a criminologist. We've met before, and it seemed like the logical choice.
I see. Well, after that case, there's one thing I'm sure of.
Oh, what's that, Margaret?
If I ever have to read to a child again, it's going to be from the Encyclopedia Britannica.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The shadow knows.
Kids, wasn't that scary, huh? Siribi, if you ask me, they should have changed the title from Nursery Rhyme to Nursery Crime, huh? But really, if I were the shadow, I would charge extra for such tough cases, for what you might call mental cases, huh? But you know, sometimes the shadow, he hides clues from us, makes it look harder than it really is. Like, he never did describe the doctor that clearly. Maybe he looked, say, too straight. Right down to that jacket, huh? Don't underestimate clothing, no. It can tell you a lot, really. Like, I bet that doctor was dressed, how do you say, to kill, huh? You know, another giveaway is if the suit is made with malpractice, huh? Me, I prefer it if the doctors that charge on a contingency basis. So, since I'm dead, to begin with, I never pay a red cent, huh? Yes, but sometimes I think those doctors, they're catching on. Like, just the other day, I tried to make an appointment, and the receptionist told me not to bother coming in if I was late, huh?
Lux presents Hollywood.
Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Gloria Swanson, William Holden, and Nancy Gates in Sunset Boulevard. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Sunset Boulevard, a busy thoroughfare in the heart of Hollywood, is far more typical of the motion picture capital than even Hollywood and Vine Streets. Here you will find the site of the first motion picture studio, the swank offices of the actors' agents, the night spots. And very far out, almost to the Pacific Ocean, the homes of the screen stars themselves. And this is where tonight's play takes place. In the home of a famous but forgotten glamorous actress of the silent days. Recreating her original role is Gloria Swanson, one of the most glamorous women of silent or talking pictures. Also playing his original role in this Paramount picture, which, by the way, received 11 nominations for Academy Awards, is that excellent actor, William Holden, and Nancy Gates, making her first appearance on our stage. Yes, Sunset Boulevard, with its many Lux girls traveling from studio to studio, is as representative of Hollywood as the Lux girls themselves. For in this capital of beauty, Lux toilet soap is a favorite complexion care. Now here's Sunset Boulevard, starring Gloria Swanson as Norma Desmond, William Holden as Joe Gillis, and Nancy Gates as Betty Schaefer, with John Wengraff as Max.
Many minutes ago, a murder was committed on Sunset Boulevard at one of those great big mansions between Hollywood and the beach. You're going to hear a lot about it because an old-time movie star is involved, one of the biggest. The police haven't arrived yet, but they're on their way, I guess. The victim's body is still floating in the swimming pool. Nobody important, really. Just a movie writer with a couple of B pictures to his credit. The poor dope. He always wanted a swimming pool. Well, he got the pool. Only the price turned out to be a little high. Let's go back about 6 months and find the day when it all started. Things had been pretty tough. I hadn't sold a story in months. But I knew a big shot over at Paramount who always seemed to have liked me. And the time had come to take advantage of it. He was a smart producer with a set of ulcers to prove.
All right, Gillis, you got 5 minutes. What's your story about?
Well, it's about a baseball player, Mr. Sheldrake.
No?
The poor kid was once mixed up in a holdup, but he's trying to go straight. I submitted an outline a while back. I imagine your story department's got a report on it.
Baseball story, huh?
Yeah, with a real good gimmick at the end.
You got a title?
Bases Loaded. And you got exactly the man for it right here on the lot, Alan Ladd. Be a great change of pace for him.
Come in.
Hello, Mr. Sheldrake.
Hello.
On that Bases Loaded, I have a 2-page synopsis. You may want to look at it.
Oh, thank you.
Personally, though, I wouldn't bother.
Oh? What's wrong with it?
It's from hunger.
I'm sure you'll be very glad to meet Mr. Gillis. He wrote it. This is Miss Schaefer from the reading department.
And right now, I wish I could crawl in a hole and pull it in after me.
If I could be of any help, Miss Schaefer.
I sorry, Mr. Gillis. I just didn't think it was any good.
Just what kind of material do you recommend? James Joyce, Dostoevsky?
Perhaps the reason I hated Bases Loaded is that I knew your name. I'd always heard that you had some talent.
That was last year. This year I'm trying to pay the rent.
That'll be all, Miss Schaefer. Thank you very much.
Goodbye, Mr. Gillis.
Look, I don't want you to think I thought this was going to win any Academy Award, but I'm over a barrel, Mr. Sheldrake. I need a job.
I haven't got a thing.
Any kind of assignment. Additional dialogue. Rewrite.
There's nothing. Honest.
Mr. Sheldrake, well, could you let me have $300? It's for my car. They're after my car. I mean yourself as a personal loan.
Could I? Gillis, last year somebody talked me into buying a ranch in the valley. So I borrowed the money from the bank to pay for the ranch. This year, I had to mortgage the ranch so I could keep up my life insurance, so I could borrow on my insurance, so I could pay the bank. Then there's a little matter called income tax. Now, in case you don't...
Well, that was that. I drove out of the parking lot. No place in particular. Just driving and trying to think things out. The time had come to wrap up the whole Hollywood deal and somehow get back to Ohio. I stopped for a traffic light. Behind me in the mirror, I saw a very familiar car. Two gentlemen from the Friendly Finance Company. I jumped the light and stepped on the gas. I was on Sunset Boulevard now, heading toward the beach. Suddenly a tire blew out. There wasn't time to think twice. I turned off the road into a private driveway. I ducked behind some fancy shrubbery and waited. I was safe. The house was a great big white elephant of a place. The kind crazy movie people built in the crazy 20s. A neglected house gets an unhappy look. This one had it in spades. Dismal and damp looking, all grown over with some devouring sort of ivy. I started wondering how anyone could ever...
You there! Why are you so late?
Oh, I beg your pardon, but I'm,
In here. Come in.
I just left my car in the driveway. I had a blowout. I thought maybe
I... Go inside.
Have him come up back.
Wipe your feet. Go on. You're not properly dressed for the occasion.
What occasion?
Go up the stairs.
Now, suppose you listen to me for just
Madame
a minute.
Madame is waiting.
For me? Okay.
If you need any help, call me.
So I went up the staircase. It led to a huge bedroom. On a table, covered with a Spanish shawl, was a monkey. A dead monkey. I guess I just stood there staring.
You should have been here hours ago. I put him there because he always liked to be near the fire. Well, I've made up my mind that he'll be buried in a garden. Any city laws against that?
I wouldn't know.
I don't care anyway. I want the coffin to be white. I want it specially lined with... satin, white, or maybe deep pink. Now, I warn you, don't quote me a fancy price just because I'm rich.
Look, you've got the wrong man, lady. I had some trouble with my car. I thought this place was empty.
It is not. Get out.
I'm sorry.
Hey, excuse me. But haven't I seen you before?
Get out.
You're Norma Desmond. You used to be in silent pictures. You used to be big.
I am big. It's the pictures that got small.
Yeah, I knew there was something wrong with them.
They're dead. They're finished. There was a time when they had the eyes of the whole wide world, but that wasn't good enough for them. Oh, no. They had to have the ears of the world, too. So they opened their big mouths, and out came talk. Talk.
Yeah, well, that's where the popcorn business comes in. You buy yourself a bag and plug up your ear.
Look at them in the front offices. The masterminds. They took the idols and smashed them. The Fairbankses, the Gilberts, the Valentinos. And who have you got now? Some nobody.
Well, don't blame me. I'm not a producer, just a writer.
You are. Writing words. Words. More words. Well, you've made a rope of words and strangled this business.
Shh. You wake up the monkey.
Get out. Max!
Okay, I'm going.
Just a minute, you. A writer, you said.
Well?
Are you or aren't you?
Oh, sure. The last story I sold was about Okies and the Dust Bowl, but you'd never know because when it reached the screen, the whole thing played on a torpedo boat.
I happen to have written a script myself. It's the story of Salome. I think I'll have DeMille direct it.
And you'll play Salome?
Well?
Only asking. I didn't know you were planning a comeback.
I hate that word. It's a return. A return to the millions of people who have never forgiven me for deserting the screen.
Fair enough.
Salome. What a woman. What a part. The princess in love with a holy man. He rejects her, so she demands his head on a golden tray, kissing his cold, dead lips. Read it. Read my manuscript. Read the scene just before she had him killed.
Now, look, never let another writer read your material, Miss Desmond. He may steal it.
I'm not afraid. Max!
Yes, madame?
The young man is staying for a while. Well, get some champagne.
So I started to read. Sometimes it's interesting just to see how bad writing can be. This promised to go the limit. She sat in front of me, coiled up like a watch spring, defying me not to like what I read, or maybe begging me in her own proud way to like it. It meant so much to her. It was sure a cozy setup. That bundle of raw nerves and Max and the dead monkey. Later on, just for comedy relief, the real guy arrived with the little coffin. It was all done with great dignity. He must have been a very important chimp. It got to be evening. I was feeling a little sick at my stomach, what with the champagne and that tripe I'd been reading. By then, however, I'd started making up a little plot of my own.
Well, you're not going to stop reading.
This is fascinating.
Of course it is.
All it needs is maybe a little more dialogue.
What for? I can say anything I want with my eyes.
Well, it certainly could use a little editing.
I will not have it butchered.
Oh, of course not. Just a touch here and there. You can find somebody.
Oh, I'd have to have somebody I could trust. When were you born? I mean, what sign of the zodiac?
I don't know.
What month? What date?
Oh, December. December 21st.
Sagittarius. I like Sagittarians. You can trust them.
Thank you.
I want you to do this work.
Me? Oh, no, I'm busy. I've got a job.
I don't care.
And I'm pretty expensive. I get $500 a week.
I wouldn't worry about money. I'll make it worth your while.
Well, maybe I'd better take it home and look it over there.
Oh, no. I won't let it out of my house. You'll have to work here.
Well, it's getting kind of late.
Are you married, mister?
Name is Gillis. Single.
Where do you live?
Hollywood, Aldo Nito Apartments.
There's something wrong with your car, you said.
There sure is.
Why shouldn't you stay here?
Look, I'll come back tomorrow.
Nonsense. There's a room over the garage. Max will take you there. Max? Max, come here.
I felt kind of pleased with the way I'd handled the situation. Sure, I'd work on a script. Meanwhile, my car would be safe and the money prospects looked very good indeed.
This garage room has not been used for a long time.
Well, I guess it's okay for one night. She's quite a character, isn't she?
She was the greatest of them all. You wouldn't know. You're too young. In 1 week, she received 17,000 fan letters.
Yeah. I sure turned into an interesting driveway.
You did, sir. Good night, Mr. Young.
I pegged him as slightly cuckoo, too. A stroke, maybe. Come to think of it, the whole place seemed to have been stricken with a kind of creeping paralysis. Out of beat with the rest of the world, crumbling apart in slow motion. When I woke up the next morning, all my belongings were there. Suitcases, books, even my typewriter. I threw on some clothes and ran over to the house.
Of course your things are there. I brought them myself.
Is that so? Well, who said you could? Who asked you to?
I did. It seemed like a good idea if we are to work together.
Well, there's nothing in the deal about my staying here.
You like it here. Besides, you can't work in an apartment where you owe 3 months' rent.
I'll take care of that.
It's all taken care of. Max, unpack Mr. Gillis's things.
That's been done, madame.
Well, pack them up again. I didn't say I was staying.
Then suppose you make up your mind. Do you want this job or not?
Yes, I wanted the job. I wanted the dough. But it wasn't so simple getting some coherence into those wild hallucinations she called a script. And what made it even tougher was that she was around all the time, hovering over me, afraid I'd do some injury to that precious brainchild.
for?
Oh, just a scene I threw out.
What scene?
Well, the one where you go to the slave market. It's better to cut directly to John the Baptist.
Cut away from me.
Well, honestly, they don't want to see you in every scene.
Don't they? Then why do they write me fan letters every day? Why do they beg me for my photograph? Why? Because they want to see me, Norma Desmond.
Okay, okay.
Put those pages back there where they belong.
So I put them back. You don't yell at a sleepwalker. He may fall and break his neck. That was it. She was still sleepwalking along the giddy heights of a lost career, plain crazy when it came to that one subject, her celluloid self, the great Norma Desmond. It wasn't all work, of course. Sometimes there'd be little bridge games at the house, friends of hers, actors, dim figures you might still remember from silent pictures. I used to think of them as her waxworks, fragile and old. They'd come and they'd go, quietly like ghosts. They never spoke to me. I don't believe they even asked her who I was. On other nights, Max would operate a motion picture machine. We'd see a movie right in her living room. A silent movie. I guess I don't have to tell you who the star was. They were always her pictures. That's all she wanted.
Still wonderful, isn't it? And no dialogue. We didn't need dialogue. We had faces. Oh, those idiot producers. Those imbeciles. Haven't they got any eyes? Have they forgotten what a star looks like? I'll show them. I'll be up there again, so help me.
One morning, Max came in with bad news for me. The men from the finance company had paid us a visit. They'd found my car and towed it away.
Be ridiculous, Joe. They took your car from life and death.
Well, it is to me. That's why I took this job.
Now you're being silly. We don't need two cars. We have a car. And not one of those cheap new things made of chromium and spit. Nisada Fischini. Have you ever heard of the Nisada Fischini? All handmade. Cost me $28,000.
So Max got the old bus down off its blocks and polished it up again. It was upholstered in leopard skin and had one of those car phones, gold plate.
That's a dreadful shirt you're wearing, Joe.
Yeah? What's wrong with it?
Nothing. You should work in a filling station. And I'm getting rather bored with that same sport jacket and the same baggy pants. Max?
Yes, madam?
Take us to a good men's shop in town. The very best. Take us there now.
But I don't need any clothes, and I certainly don't want you buying them for
me. Why begrudge me a little fun? I just want you to look nice. And must you chew gum?
The last week in December, the rains came. It came right through the old roof of my room over the garage. So she had Max move me into the main house. I didn't much like the idea, but it was better than sleeping in a raincoat and galoshes.
It should be quite comfortable over here, Mr. Gilly.
Uh-huh. Whose room was this?
It was the room of the husband, or the husband's, I should say. Madame has been married 3 times.
Hey, what's the matter with the door? There isn't any lock.
There are no locks anywhere in this house, sir.
How come?
Madame has had some moments of melancholy. There have been some attempts. Suicide.
Oh.
You have to be very careful. No sleeping pills, no razor blades. She turned off the gas in Madame's bedroom.
Why? Her career? She got enough out of it. She's not forgotten. She still gets those fan letters.
Those letters? I would not look too closely at the postmarks.
You send them. Is that it, Max?
I'd better press your evening clothes, sir. Mr. Gillis has not forgotten Madame's New Year's.
No, No, I hadn't forgotten the party. I dreaded it. But I was curious as to who would be there. I heard voices. Max ushering in the orchestra. A little later on, they started to play. I went downstairs. This was the night I was to find out how she felt about me. I'd been an idiot not to have sensed it coming. That sad, embarrassing revelation. She was dancing alone, a tango. If there had been any hope of ducking that New Year's Eve party, believe me, I wouldn't have been there. As it was, I had put on that dinner jacket from the best shop in town and went downstairs.
You look absolutely divine. Turn around.
Oh, please.
Come on. Perfect. Wonderful shoulders. And I love that line.
Oh, it's all padding. Don't let it fool you.
Cute. You know, this floor used to be wood, but I had it changed. Valentina said there's nothing like tiles for a tango. You tango, don't you?
Not on the same floor with Valentino. Norma, it's late. What time are they supposed to get here?
Who?
The other guests.
There are no other guests. This is for you and me, Joe.
Oh?
Hold me tighter.
Okay.
You think this is all very funny?
A little.
Be patient, Joe. You think it's nice, not funny. You think it's very nice.
So we danced. Norma Desmond and I, in a room big enough for a softball game, to the music of a 20-piece orchestra.
What a wonderful year it's going to be, Joe. What fun we'll have. I'll build my pool for you. I'll open my house in Malibu and have a whole ocean. And when our picture's finished, I'll buy you a boat and we'll sail to Honolulu.
Oh, stop it. You're not going to buy me anything anymore.
Don't be silly. I'm rich, Joe. I'm richer than all this new Hollywood trash. I've got $1 million.
Keep it.
I own 3 blocks downtown. I've got oil and Bakersfield pumping, pumping, pumping. What's it for? But to buy us anything we want.
Cut out that us business.
What's the matter with you?
Has it ever occurred to you that I may have a life of my own, that there may be some girl that I'm crazy about?
Who? Some car hop? Some dress extra from Central Casting?
What I'm trying to say is that I'm all wrong for you. You want a Valentino, somebody with polo ponies, a big shot.
What you're trying to say is you don't want me to love you, is that it? Well, sing it. Sing it.
She left the room and rushed upstairs, and the orchestra kept playing. Well, I'd had enough. I grabbed my coat and left. I thought about a friend of mine, Artie Green, an assistant director. There was bound to be a New Year's shindig going on in his apartment. I walked down to the boulevard and hitched a ride into town.
Well, what do you know? Joe Gillis.
Hi, Artie.
Where you been? I dropped by your place a couple of weeks ago on the land.
Well, I moved out to a deep freeze. Look, I'll give you a full report later. Meantime, could I stick around here for a while?
Oh, this will go on all night.
No, I mean, could you put me up for a week or so?
Well, sure, Joe, sure. Just stand by, kid. I'll get you a drink.
Hello, Mr. Gillis.
Oh, hello.
Betty Schaefer, remember? Sheldrake's office.
Oh, yes.
I've been hoping I'd run into you, Mr. Gillis.
What for? To recover that knife you stuck in my back?
Well, I did feel a little guilty. So I got out some of your old stories.
Why, you sweet kid.
Please, I would like to talk to you. Come on, let's go in the kitchen.
I didn't pay much attention to what Betty was trying to tell me. Too much noise, too many people having a good time. But suddenly I knew I was feeling good again and that she was part of that feeling. I told her to wait for me. I'd be right back. I had to make a phone call.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gillis, but I cannot talk to you now.
Yes, you can. Now, look, Max, I want you to get out my old suitcase and pack all of my
I have no time to do anything now. The doctor is here.
Doctor? What's going on?
Madame Gutt, the razor from your room, and she cut her wrist.
Max. Max, hello, Max.
Hey, Joe, where are you going?
What did you do to him, honey? Scare him or something?
Who is he talking to, Artie? Why would he leave like that?
I don't know. How do you like that guy?
Thank you for coming back, Mr. Gillis.
How is she?
The doctor says she will be all right. Be careful, Mr. Gillis. Be careful what you say to her. Norma?
Go away. Don't look at me. Go away and let me alone.
What kind of a silly thing was that to do?
To fall in love with you. That was the idiotic thing.
It sure would have made attractive headlines. Great star kills herself for unknown writer.
Great stars and great pride. Go away. Go back to that girl of yours.
Look, I was making that up because I thought the whole thing was a mistake. I didn't want to hurt you. You've been good to me, Norma. You're the only person in this stinking town who has been good to me.
Then why don't you just say thank you? Just get out.
Not until you promise to act like a sensible human being.
I'll do it again. I'll do it again. I'll do it again.
Norma. Happy New Year, Norma.
Oh, Joe. Joe, Happy New Year, Tony.
By the following day, if it hadn't been for her bandaged wrists, no one would have dreamed that here was a woman who'd tried to kill herself.
Immediately, Max. Immediately. Take the script over to Paramount and be sure you deliver it to Mr. DeMille in person.
Very good, madam.
You're really going to send it to DeMille?
Well, this is the day. This is the day, Joe. Look, here's a chart from my astrologer. She's read DeMille's horoscope. She's read mine.
Did she read the script? Norma, scripts don't sell on astrologers' charts.
But, darling, I'm not just selling the script. I'm selling me. DeMille always said I was his greatest star.
When did he say it, Norma?
Well, all right, it was quite a few years ago. But the point is, I never looked better in my life. You know why? Because I've never been as happy in my life. Now, hurry, Max, hurry!
We pause now for station identification.
Oh, kids, this is scary. I've never been so scared. That old witch is making the moves on our hero, Bert. Yeah, that's what I see, the dog. I wonder what she'll say when he rejects her. Probably abracadabra and turn him into a toad, huh? You know how those witches are. When they curse, they mean it, huh? And all hell broke loose. At least as a writer, perhaps he can appreciate suspense that really keeps him spellbound, huh? But if he's smart, he'll pretend she's the woman of his dreams. I always say a wart on her nose is better than a few on your tush. But hopping right along, let's return to our story and see if he takes our advice and uses her broom to sweep her off her feet, huh?
You, madame. The telephone. Paramount is calling.
Now, do you believe me, Joe? Paramount is calling. I told you DeMille would jump at my story.
It's not Mr. DeMille in person, madame. Someone by the name of Gordon Cole. He says it is very important.
Certainly it's important. The very idea of having some assistant call me. Say that I'm busy and hang up.
Very good, madame.
How do you like that? We made 12 pictures together. His greatest successes.
Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's shooting.
I know that trick. He's trying to belittle me. He's trying to get my price down. I've waited 20 years for this call. Now DeMille can wait until I'm good.
About 3 days later, she was good and ready. Incredible as it may seem, there had been more of those urgent calls from Paramount.
So she put on a half a pound of makeup, fixed it up with a veil, and set forth to see DeMille in person.
Joe, are you sure you don't want to see Mr. DeMille with me, dear?
No, I'll wait outside. It's your script, Norma. It's your show. Good luck.
Thank you, darling. Max, what are we waiting for?
The gate, madame.
All that noise, would you please?
To see Mr. DeMille. Open the gate.
Mr. DeMille is shooting. Have you got an appointment?
No appointment necessary. I am bringing Norma Desmond.
Norma who?
Norma Desmond.
Jonesy, it is you, Jonesy.
What? Why, Miss Desmond. Oh, how have you been, Miss Desmond?
Just tell that officer to open the gate.
Sure, Miss Desmond. Okay, Mac, open it up.
Yeah, they can't drive on the lot without a pass.
Miss Desmond can. Open it up.
Where's Mr. DeMille shooting, Jonesy?
Stage 18, Miss Desmond.
Thank you, Jonesy. And teach your young friend some manners. Tell him without me, he wouldn't have any job. Max, stage 18.
It wasn't possible. How could a man of DeMille's intelligence see even a glimmer of hope in a script as bad as the one she'd sent him? But he came out of the sound stage and put his arms around her, and then led her into his set.
Solomon, Mr. Gillis, the extra, the electrician, they fall all over each other just to get a look at her. You see that row of offices? That used to be Madame's dressing room. The whole row.
That didn't leave much for Wallace Reed. Oh, that sign over there, Max. Reader's department. Reminds me, I want to look up somebody. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Well, for heaven's sake, come on in. Have a chair.
Hello, Betty. I just thought I'd tell you that if you still think there's anything in that story of mine, go ahead, take it. It's all yours.
Why?
Well, it's no good to me. Help yourself. I mean it.
That doesn't make sense. Besides, I'm just not good enough to do it by myself.
Well, what about all those ideas you had?
You don't even know what they are. Maybe they aren't any good. Oh, look, Joe, please, if you're busy, maybe we could work evenings or even 6 o'clock in the morning.
Artie would just love that.
Well, for the next month, Artie won't mind at all. He's out of town. Incidentally, we're engaged.
Oh? Huh. Well, good for you. You couldn't find a nicer guy.
That's what I think. Anyway, he's on location in Arizona, so I'm free every evening and every weekend.
Look, Betty, it can't be done. It's out. Now stop being chicken-hearted and write that story. And don't make it too dreary. Get a few laughs in it. So long, Betty. Good luck.
So honest to goodness. I hate you.
As I walked back to the car, I saw someone talking to Max. He was just leaving. Then Max turned to me and looked at me helplessly. What's the matter?
That man, one of the Mills' assistants.
Well?
The reason for all those telephone calls to Madame. It was not DeMille. It was the property department who called.
Property department?
The car. They saw the car when I brought the script here. They want to rent the car for a Bing Crosby picture.
And DeMille's going to tell her then?
He will know what to tell her. He remembers her. He will not break her heart.
Take it easy. She's coming.
You see? Look at her. Look at her. She's radiant.
Well, how'd it go?
Oh, it couldn't have gone better. It's practically set. Of course, he has to finish this picture first. It's a circus picture. But I'm next. I'm sure I'm next. He said nothing would please him more than to work with me again.
Norma.
Oh, it's nothing. I just didn't realize what it would be like to come back to the old studio. Oh, what are you waiting for, Max?
Forgive me, madam. Your arm, madam.
After that, an army of beauty experts invaded the house. She went through a merciless series of treatments, like an athlete training for the Olympic Games. She went to bed every night at 9. She was absolutely determined to be ready. Ready for those cameras that would never turn.
Joe, darling, are you there?
Yes, Norma. Oh,
don't turn around. Keep your eyes on the book. I just came down to say goodnight. I don't want you to see me. I'm not very attractive at the moment.
All right, good.
No, I've lost a pound and a half since Tuesday.
Good.
You going to read all night?
Oh, for a while.
You went out last night, didn't you, Joe?
I
I went for a walk.
No, you didn't. You took the car. It's all right. It's just that I don't want to be left alone. Not while I'm under this terrible strain. All I ask is for you to be a little patient and a little kind.
Norma, I haven't done anything.
Of course you haven't. I wouldn't let you. Good night, darling.
Yes, she was right. I was playing hooky every night. That story of mine that Betty Schaefer had dug up kept going through my head like a locomotive. I had phoned her, and we'd started working on it, just the two of us in her office, nights when the studio was deserted. And sometimes when we got stuck, we'd walk around the lot, just wandering down alleys between the sound stages, or through the sets they were getting ready for the next day's shooting. It was on one of those walks that Betty first told me about her nose.
So naturally, my family expected me to become a great star. Anyway, the studio made a test, but they didn't like my nose. It slanted a little.
Oh, they're crazy.
Oh, no, they're not. So I went to a doctor and had it fixed. Then they gave me another test. This time they were crazy about my nose, but they didn't like my acting.
That's the saddest thing I ever heard.
Oh, not at all. It really taught me a little sense. So I got a job in the mailroom, then stenographic, and now I'm a reader.
Three cheers for Betty Schaefer. I will now kiss her nose.
If you please.
May I say that you smell real special?
Must be my new shampoo.
No. Oh, that's not shampoo. It's more like freshly laundered linen handkerchiefs. And may I suggest that if we're ever to finish our story, you stay at least 2 feet away from me at all times. Now let's walk back to your office. It was long past midnight when I got back to the house. Max was waiting for me in the patio.
Mr. Gillis, you must be very careful. Madame may be watching. Mr. Gillis, I'm not inquiring where you go every night.
Well, why don't you? I'm writing a script, and I'm going to finish it.
It is just that I am greatly worried about Madame.
And you're not helping her any, feeding her lies and more lies. What happens when she finds out there isn't going to be any picture?
She will never find out. That's my job. It's been my job for a long time. I made Norma Desmond a star, and I cannot let her be destroyed.
You made her a star?
I discovered her. I directed all her early films.
And she's turned you into a servant.
It was I who asked to come back, humiliating as that may seem. You see, I was her first husband.
The following night, as usual, I was in Betty's office. Betty was strangely quiet. It wasn't like her. Something had happened.
I'm sorry, Joe. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, is it about me? What have you heard?
No. It's Artie. He sent me a telegram.
Oh? Anything wrong?
He wants me to come on to Arizona, Joe. He said it only... It cost $2 to get married there.
Why don't you? Well, stop crying, will you? You're getting married. That's what you wanted.
I don't want it now.
Why not? Don't you love Artie?
Of course I love him. I always will. I'm not in love with him anymore, that's all.
What happened?
You did? Oh, Joe.
She'd been a fool not to sense there was something phony in my setup. And I'd been a heel not to have told her. But you just can't say those things to somebody you're crazy about. Maybe I'd never have to. Maybe I could get away with it, get away from Norma. Maybe I could wipe the whole nasty mess right out of my life. As soon as I got back to that peculiar prison of mine, I went to Norma's room. The door was closed, but I could hear her talking.
You, Miss, so late, Miss Schaefer. But I really feel it's my duty. Never mind who I am. You do know, Mr. Gillis. Exactly how much do you know about him? Do you know where he lives? Do you know how he lives? Miss Schaefer, I'm trying to spare you a great deal of misery. Very well, then. Ask him. Ask him.
Give me that phone.
No, John. No.
Give it to me. That's right, Betty. Ask me. Or better yet, why don't you come out and see for yourself? The address is 10,086 Sunset Boulevard.
Don't hate me, Joe. Don't hate me. I found a script in your room. Your name was on it. Your name and hers. I called her up because I need you. I need you as I never needed you before. Oh, look at me. Look at my hands. Look at my face. Look under my eyes. How can I go back to my work if I'm wasting away under this torment? You don't know what I've been through these last weeks. I bought myself a revolver. I did. I stood in front of that mirror, but I couldn't make myself do it. Don't just stand there hating me. Shoot at me. Strike me, but don't hate me. Oh, Joe. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
What was I going to do? Over and over, she kept repeating those words, sobbing, hysterical. I left the room and went out of doors. I kept walking around. And then I saw some headlights and a car turned into the driveway. Betty had come.
Joe, what is it? What's wrong? I didn't know what to do, so I jumped in the car.
Come on in. Come on in the house, Betty.
I don't know why I was scared, Joe. Is it something awful?
Take a look around, Betty. Ever been in one of these old Hollywood palazzos? They built them like this when they were making $18,000 a week and no taxes.
You live here, Joe?
You bet.
Whose house is it?
Whose? Well, there are 100 photographs of her in that one room. If you don't remember the face, you must have heard the name. Norma Desmond?
Why did she call me?
Did you ever see so much junk? She had the ceiling brought all the way over from Portugal. And look at this.
Joe, what about Norma Desmond?
That's what I'm trying to tell you. This is an enormous place. It's lonely here. So she got herself a companion. Very simple setup. An older woman who's well-to-do. A younger man who's not doing too well. Can you figure it out yourself?
No.
All right, I'll give you a few more clues.
No. No, I haven't heard any of this. She never called me, and I've never been in this house. Now get your things together, and let's get out of here.
All my things? My 18 suits, my custom-made shoes, the 6 dozen shirts, the cufflinks, and the platinum keychains and cigarette cases?
Come on, Joe.
Come on where? Back to a one-room apartment I can't pay the rent for? Back to a story that may sell and very possibly may not?
If you love me, Joe.
Look, sweetie, be practical. I like it here. Maybe it's not very admirable. Well, you and Artie can be admirable.
I can't look at you anymore, Joe.
How about looking for the exit, then? This way. Good luck to you, Betty. You can finish that script on your way to Arizona. And when you and Artie get back, if the two of you ever feel like taking a swim, there's a pool out there. Italian marble and soft-colored lights.
Thank you, darling. Thank you, Joe.
Get out of my way. I'm leaving, Norma.
Joe. Joe, no, you can't leave me. You can't.
I said I'm leaving.
No, you're not.
Thanks for letting me wear the handsome wardrobe, and thanks for the use of all the trinkets. The jewelry's all in the top drawer.
It's yours, Joe. I gave it to you.
And I'd take it in a second. Only it's a little too dressy for Dayton, Ohio.
What I gave you is nothing. You can have anything you want. What is it you want? Money?
You'd be throwing it away, Norma. I don't qualify for the job. Not anymore.
You can't go. Max! Max! I can't face life without you. And you know I'm not afraid to die.
That's between you and yourself.
You think I made that up about the gun, don't you? All right, see, I do have a gun. I suppose you don't think I have a courage.
Oh, sure, sure.
You don't.
If it would make a good scene.
You don't care, do you? Well, hundreds of thousands of people will.
Oh, wake up, Norma. You'd be killing yourself to an empty house. The audience left 20 years ago. Now face it.
That's a lie. They still want me.
No, they don't.
What about the studio? What about DeMille?
He couldn't hurt you. He couldn't hurt anyone. DeMille was trying to spare your feelings. The studio only wanted to rent your car.
Wanted? What?
DeMille didn't have the heart to tell you. None of us had the heart. Come on in, Max. Go on, tell her.
It's a lie. They want me. I get letters every day.
Do her that favor, Max. Tell her there isn't going to be any picture. There aren't any fan letters except the ones you write.
Max, that isn't true.
Madame is still the greatest star of them all. I'll take Mr. Gillis back for the car.
You heard him. I'm a star.
Norma, you're a woman of 50. Now grow up. There's nothing tragic about being 50, not unless you try to be 25.
I'm the greatest star of them all.
Goodbye, Norma.
No one ever leaves a star. That's what makes
it. I left her standing there. I grabbed my coat and started out. She kept calling me.
Don't! Don't! Don't!
I could hear her running after me.
Don't! Don't!
I was out of the house now. The air suddenly felt fresh again, clean. I started across the patio. She called to me once again.
Don't!
But I didn't stop. I kept on going. Suddenly, it was a great effort to keep on walking. I was alongside the pool now, and if I could only... This is just about where you came in. Back at that pool again. The one I always wanted. Only now the place is crawling with people. The police, detectives, reporters, photographers. They took pictures of me in the pool and they took pictures of me out of the pool. They were very careful with me. Gentle. It's funny how gentle people get with you once you're dead. Well, the newsreel guys are roaring in now. Here's an item everybody can have some fun with. The heartless so-and-sos. What would they do to Norma? Even if she gets away with it in court, crime of passion, temporary insanity, the headlines are going to kill her. Forgotten star, a slayer. Aging actress. Yesterday's glamour queen. They're talking to her now up in the house. The boys from Homicide. They found her upstairs, sitting at her dressing table, arranging her hair.
She just won't talk, Captain. State of shock, I guess.
Miss Desmond, please. You don't deny having killed that man.
Just answer us yes or no. Did you intend to kill him?
Who is he? Where did you first meet him? Where does he come from?
Newsreel men are here with the cameras, Captain.
Tell him to go fly a kite. This is no time for cameras. Miss Desmond, is there anything at all you want to tell us?
Cameras? He said cameras. What is it, Max?
The cameras have arrived, madam.
Yeah. Tell Mr. DeMille I'll be on the set at once.
What is this? It's one way to get her downstairs, isn't it?
Okay. Have the car right outside.
Everything will be ready, madam.
Thank you, Max. You'll pardon me, gentlemen, but I must get ready for my scene.
The cameramen were at the foot of the stairs. A dozen reporters firing questions, but Max didn't even bother to look at them. It was the cameras he was interested in.
Quiet, everybody! Miss Desmond is coming. Lights. Turn up the lights.
Lights?
Are you ready, Norma?
What is the scene? Where am I?
This is the staircase of the palace.
Oh, yes.
Down below. They're waiting for the princess.
I'm ready.
All right. Cameras. Action.
So they were turning after all. Those cameras. Life, which can be strangely merciful, had taken pity on Norma Desmond. She came down the stairs. They were not policemen. They were not photographers or reporters or just the morbidly curious. To Norma, they were her public, her fans. And she was back again, working with DeMille.
I can't go on with the scene. I'm too happy. Mr. DeMille, do you mind if I say a few words? Thank you.
I just want to tell you all how happy I am to be back in the studio, making a picture again. You don't know how much I've missed all of you. And I promise you I'll never desert you again. Because after Salome, we'll make another picture and another picture. You see, this is my life. It always will be. There's nothing else. Just us and the cameras and those wonderful people out there in the dark. All right, Mr. DeMille. I'm ready for my close-up.
In a few minutes, we want you to meet our stars in person. Mr. Keeley will tell you about next week's show. But first, here's Libby Collins with a very exciting question.
Who is the lovely Lux girl?
Oh, you mean who is the mystery star in the big Lux girl contest?
That's it. The lovely Hollywood star with her eyes masked out. Her picture's appearing in newspapers everywhere, on posters and grocery stores all over the country.
Give our listeners a clue, Libby, to help identify her.
Right. Our Lux mystery girl is the star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Too Young to Kiss.
That makes it easy for everyone to identify her and to enter this wonderful Lux contest.
The prizes, John, are simply wonderful. Why, the first prize is $5,000 cash plus a Ford Victoria sedan.
And there are 10 more Ford Victoria sedans to be given away.
And 214-carat gold diamond Bulova watches.
Plus $10,000 in additional cash prizes.
Over $60,000 worth of prizes. And everyone easy to win. Besides, it's really fun to enter the contest. First, you identify the mystery star. Then, complete the last line of a jingle.
Now, here's the jingle. June is her name. The last is da-da-da. That's where you fill in the star's name. I'll repeat it. June is her name. The last is da-da-da. Her lovely skin's beyond comparison. Her beauty soaps the one from me. Da-dee, 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 da-dee.
Everyone knows lots of nice things about Lux Soap to help write that last line.
Yes, for instance, Lux Soap has active lather. Rich, creamy lather that cleanses gently but thoroughly, leaves skin softer, smoother. It's a firm white cake with a delicate flower-like fragrance. Comes in a generous big bath size, too. 9 out of 10 screen stars are Lux Girl. So go ahead, enter this big Who is the Lovely Lux Girl contest right away. Get the entry blank at your grocer's tomorrow. The picture of the star to be identified, the jingle, the rules, and the address are all on the blank. Send in as many entries as you wish, but with each entry, attach 2 Lux toilet soap wrappers, either regular or bath size. The contest closes October 15th, so start now. Get your entry in right away. Just think, $60,000 worth of prizes, over 1,200 opportunities for you to win. And now, here's Mr. Keeley with our stars.
And we want them to come forward for a well-deserved curtain call. Gloria Swanson, William Holden, and Nancy Gates. Gloria, I can't tell you what pleasure it gives me to welcome you to the Lux Radio Theater.
Thank you very much, Bill Keeley.
Gloria, I understand that you're leaving town tomorrow to attend a big fashion show in the East.
That's right, Bill. I've designed a lot of clothes for the show, and I'm delighted over my new creation.
Well, we're delighted that you could make our Lux Radio show. Gloria, with all your activities, motion pictures, stage, your radio and television shows, dress designing, manufacturing...
Now, Bill, that's enough about me. What about Nancy Gates?
Me? Well, I just recently signed with the studio, Miss Swanson. And I do think I'm very fortunate to start off as a member of Paramount's Golden Circle.
You sure are, Nancy. I was a member of the original Golden Circle Players, and it was one of the best breaks of my career.
Well, Bill, I think the Golden Circle is filled with very talented young people. And, of course, all the girls would like to be a glamorous star like you, Miss Swanson.
Oh, thank you, Nancy, thank you. Now, what about Bill? What have you been doing recently?
Well, I just finished a picture at Paramount with Nancy Olsen and Bill Bendix called Submarine Command.
A submarine commander? That's something I haven't done. The picture I just finished, 3-4 Bedroom C, is all about a stage but attractive scientist and motion picture star. He knows everything about atomic radiation and nothing about the warm human chemical radiation that takes place between the male and the female. But he learns.
Yes, indeed. He learned.
You're just the one to teach him. You know, that sounds like a real comedy hit.
And speaking of hits, Gloria, a Lux soap is a real hit with everyone.
Well, now, that's not new, Bill. For a long time, we screen actresses have depended on Lux toilet soap.
That's right, Miss Swanson. And we hope to be screen actresses wouldn't think of missing our Lux soap facial.
And I don't want to miss the announcement of next week's show, Bill.
Next week, we'll have a salute to the motion picture industry. We call it Movie Time USA. And we'll present scenes from 7 important new productions with 15 of our top stars. They will be Mary Alden, Anne Blythe, Leslie Caron, Claudette Colbert, Gary Cooper, Wendell Corey, Bing Crosby, Dan Daly, John Derrick, Joanne Drew, Gene Kelly, Vera Ralston, Donna Reed, Forrest Tucker, and Jane Wyman.
Ooh!
Just a little something they whipped up.
Well, that's going to be a great, great, super great show, Bill. Now I must say good night.
We'll all be listening. Good night.
Good night, and all of our best wishes.
Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday evening. This is William Keeley saying good night to you from Hollywood.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Oh, kids, wasn't that scary? More scarier than even I imagined. The entire story was told by a dead man. At least we have something in common, huh?
Yes, yes.
He didn't take our advice and marry money, so he had to cash in his chips to afford it. but you had to admit, at least he went in style. How many people do you know who can swim in pools of hot and cold running blood, huh?
Yes, yes.
Now, in vampire terms of status, that's the ultimate in good taste.
Yes.
No wonder everyone swarmed to take pictures. The selfish dogs. I would have been content with just a glassful, huh? I had a relative that joined the police force for the sole reason of being the first on such scenes. In fact, he was the one that nicknamed the ambulance the Meat Wagon.
Yes, yes.
Now he's in the morgue business. In fact, I asked him how easy it is to get started. He said the competition was pretty stiff.
Yes, yes.
But he says there is a way to assemble the needed money using a simple 6-step plan. He calls it the 6-foot down payment, huh?
Yes, you can hear him going down, down now.
Well, I had better fly, so until next week. Same bat time, same bat station. This is a count reminding you to save for your mortgage.
Device to you until next week.
No.